Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Save big money now on new siding from LP Smart Side at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP Smart Side today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Trying to get by Benning. Darnell Nurse left it in the corner. Gets up center. Perry scoops. Corey Perry.
Well, yeah, able to shake away from Solani. It's given away to Solani around in front. Score! Teemu Selanne with the steal.
Three of the fans want one.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I was seeing how long I could let it go. Well, hey, listen. I forget what we promised on the last show. We said we would be back. No, we're right. We said we'd be back for just after the trade deadline.
Yes, we said we would definitely be back after the trade deadline and maybe before it if something weird happened, but nothing did.
Nothing weird happened. No. We got Henrik a day before the trade deadline. We got Labushkin a couple of days before the trade deadline, but nothing.
Nothing we weren't expecting.
Yeah, and as per usual every year, the trade deadline is actually the day or two before the trade deadline. So we saw Gensel the night before, which was the big one.
Is it still the big one? I feel like they might have changed that.
I think in terms of names, like, Hurdle's a big one, but it's the timing, like, right when the window was closing, I feel like, is what makes it. And it's Vegas, and I still think Gensel's, even though it's a rental, is the bigger deal, right? Everybody knew he was going to go, so I guess in that sense it makes it less of a headline, but that's the big get.
Let me ask it this way. If you say they're both at 100%, who would you rather have on your team?
Jake Gensel.
Over Thomas Hurdle?
Wow. I also just really like the fit for Carolina.
Oh, I think Jake Gensel's great, and he's probably the best winger to come on the market since Brady Kachuk, or to Matty Kachuk.
Yeah.
But I think Hurdle's a better player.
All around, yeah, for sure. For sure.
Yeah, like, it really is, like,
it depends
somewhat,
what you want,
like, archaic,
right?
Thinking. But if you're asking me just in a vacuum, do I want a goal-scoring winger who's only hit 40 goals once, or a two-way center that is a low-end 1C, but is at best a high-end 2C, then, yeah, I'm taking those center every time.
Yeah, it's the whole argument, the playing with Sid argument, right? That we see a lot. No, I mean, he's been pretty productive away from Sid too, but that was something that was always going to come along.
Oh no. Yes. I lied. He's hit 40 goals twice.
Yeah.
In 18-19 and 21-22. And he had 36 and 78 last year, so that's not, you know.
Yeah. And he was off to a good go this year too, right? I don't know.
22 goals in 50 games, man. He's great. He's over a point per game. He's got 22 goals and 30 assists. In 50 games.
He's legit, for sure.
He's really good.
So, I want to start. I mean, obviously, we're going to cover the trade deadline. This is a big thing. We're going to cover them all. Ducks did what we expected, right? Like, the bare minimum. They moved the guys that we expected to go, and the guys that we thought maybe could go didn't go. But they moved the two unrestricted free agents that had to go. Vetrano stays put. Gibson stays put. Max Jones stays put. A couple minor league deals. I guess, yeah, the most surprising one, I guess, is the Jacob Perreault deal, right? The swap for Yan Mizak to Montreal. Like, that's the most out-of-nowhere one. And and even then, like, you can kind of see, like, it's surprising among the other trades that happened for the Ducks, but it's not at the same time. Like, he had gotten 9 points, 9 games without scoring a point. He's had some long stretches like that with the goals where he's just very streaky, gets hot for, you know, that 5 to 10 stretch of games, and then he'll disappear for the last bit, get healthy scratched, and then I think this was just kind of the last straw for them, this last 9-game stretch here where he didn't record a point, then got a healthy scratch, and then the next day he's dealt off to Montreal for a fresh start. So that's probably the most surprising one of the bunch, I'd say, for the Ducks, right?
100%.
Unless you want to say Ben Myers coming in for a fifth round pick is your surprising.
Yeah, surprising. I think you can certainly argue that giving up a pick for a player is more surprising than an AHL swap, right? Just like in a vacuum, because like we pretty much get one AHL swap every year. There's one AHL trade. Last year it was Drew Hunter.
Would you say this is slightly more than like the prototypical AHL swap? They're decent, high profile names from where they're drafted. They both struggled in the AHL, but they were, you know, Perreault was first round pick, Mizak was a second round pick. Both guys
both drafted in the top 50.
Yeah, both were projected first round talents. I think it's, yeah, it definitely, obviously, in the nature of things, it's an AHL swap. But I think it's more than a, you know, like the Hunter Drew type swap, right? Like, it's still two young, skilled players who both teams can hope could be middle six players at a minimum if things pan out for them.
Yeah, maybe. Let me see. I don't know what I'm doing here. Sorry, I'm looking for the draft. Because they were, what, 2020 draft picks?
I believe so, yeah.
Jacob Perreault, 2020 draft pick.
Perreault was drafted like 26.
And yeah, and my 48. Yeah. And yeah, so 27 and 48.
27 and
48,
yeah.
You know who went 3 picks before Jan Mysik?
Who?
Brock Faber. You know where Brock Faber? You know where Brock Faber went?
What? Sorry.
You know where else Brock Faber went?
No.
He went 18 picks after we took Jacob Perreault.
Yeah.
Oh, and you know who, we dropped, you know, Sam Colangelo too.
We had this conversation the other day, or I brought it up to you. You know who Brock Faber was drafted by? The Kings. You know whose prospect pool that was touted as the best in the league, and almost none of them have panned out? The Kings. Now,
you know, it's,
Faber has panned out, just not with the Kings.
That's an interesting thing. Like, how much different does the prospect pool look if they still have Faber?
I still think there's a lot of misses. Like, I outlined. I'm going to pull it up now.
I think 100% what you said is still very valid.
It's because it's Faber, Byfield, and Clark. And even Clark is still, like, in the mix right now of whether it's panning out or not. Like, it's still a little bit early, I think, to say
it's,
for
it's him. 150 games. It's 150 to 200 games. That's the line. I don't.
Yeah.
No matter what, if they're playing well, if they're playing bad, it doesn't matter either way to me.
Yeah.
150 games is when you find out roughly what you have, and even then, we've still seen players improve after their 250 games.
Yeah. And listen, not everybody. I'm sure you can make this list for the Ducks as well with a lot of their prospects. Jacob Perreault would be in the same boat before
Braden Tracy off,
right? So, but it's Jacob just Larson. There was every draft. It was the Kings walked away with these guys and. They're the steals of the draft, and Rob Blake's a genius. And you look at, you know, it started all the way back with Velarde, and even Gabe Velarde's been decent. He was good when he went over to Winnipeg and before he got injured, but he's not at the 11th overall level. He got shipped out. Jared Anderson Dolan just got claimed off waivers by Nashville. Rasmus Kupari was shipped out in the Pierre-Luc Dubois trade. Akil Thomas hasn't panned out. He's still an AHL-level player at best. Alex Turcotte, I know you still think there's something there, but
I do.
For a fifth overall talent, struggled with injuries, hasn't made his mark at the NHL level yet, and has struggled to get things going consistently in the AHL. Tobias Bjorn fought, claimed off waivers twice, claimed off by Vegas, and then put on waivers again by Vegas. I think he was claimed by the Flames or something today. I can't remember.
No, he was claimed by the Panthers.
By the Panthers, yeah. Kaliev was on the trade block, but even without that, he hasn't panned out necessarily to the level people expected of him. He was the steal of the second round when he was drafted. Samuel Fajimo shipped out, or I believe claimed off waivers. Helga Granz was shipped out. He's an AHL player now. Brock Faber was traded in the Kevin Fiala deal, I think, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now he's panned out. He scored a goal tonight for Minnesota. He's looking really good.
Real quick. Let me ask you this question, Eddie.
Mm-hmm.
Who's the second best player from the 2019 draft?
Who was the first overall pick in that draft?
Jack Hughes.
So that's the Zegras draft then, right?
Mm-hmm. Because here's the thing that I'm looking at that I'm very interested in. They took Turcotte fifth.
Mm-hmm.
Before that was Colorado took Byram, Chicago took Dak, and the Rangers took Kako. All three of those, except for Kako has been in trade rumors all year.
Mm-hmm.
Both of those two dudes got traded, Dak and Byram.
Mm-hmm.
Alex Turcotte has been an under disappointment. Then you get to Mo Sider, Dylan Cousins, Philip Broberg, Trevor Zegras, Podkolzin, Soderstrom, Matthew Boldy, Cole Caulfield. Like this is the thing that I think is very interesting. Is like, I don't know who the second best player in this draft is. I think it might be Matthew Boldy.
Yeah, Cole Caulfield, you could say.
Mm-hmm.
Mo Sider, I think for sure, is up there as well. But it's not clear cut. Like, it's Jack Hughes for sure, number one.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond that, there's no definitive number two yet.
There's not. That's crazy.
There's guys you could give a slight edge to now because of their production, but there's other guys, like, I mean, you could put Zegras in that conversation without the injury this year if things start, you know, moving in the right direction for him. He could be in that conversation with Sider, with Caulfield, with Boldy. So it's tough, but I mean, listen, we're what, four years out from that draft? A few of these guys are in their sophomore season at this point, right? So in their second
full Jack season Hughes, in NHL. Right. Jack Hughes basically made the team immediately, and he still hasn't played 300 games. He would have hit 300 games if he hadn't missed some time this season. He's at 291, but that's where we're at.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think the fact that we're inside the four seasons, you know, line is very telling.
Yeah, I mean, there's still time for Turcotte, but like my whole point with that is you know, they have two guys of the 15 or so that have panned out, but Quentin Byfield, and that's just as this year has started to get things going. I still, again, believe he was the best player in that draft, and I think that that's going to come out eventually, unfortunately, to be the case with him. He's starting to fill those shoes. I think Brent Clark is an excellent player, and this is his rookie year, and things are starting to go his way. That one's up in the air. And then Brock Faber, who's no longer with the Kings, I think is showing in Minnesota that he was a hit for the Kings. But that's three guys, and they only own two of them currently. The rest of them,
yep.
There's no signs of anything turning around. And like you said, maybe the only, and most of them aren't there anymore, and the only guy who I would say has a legitimate shot, and that's just because of the talent and where he was drafted, of turning things around eventually, is Alex Turcotte. So I just wanted to take my time to shit on the Kings, and they missed out on Allmark today, which was great.
Man, is that the most interesting trade that didn't happen?
No, 100%. I would have loved to know what was involved in that deal. Maybe Brent Clark goes out the door and they ship out another one.
God, could you imagine trading Brent Clark for Linus Allmark?
There's no way, but maybe that's where Turcotte goes, right? Possibly.
Allmark makes $5 million. Well, PLD makes 8.5. I think it would have been like Matt Grzelcyk in line at Solmark.
And Dubois going back the other way?
Dubois going the other way, and maybe or maybe DeBrusque, actually. They could have taken DeBrusque. Mm-hmm. And then maybe you do Dubois and a pick or something.
Yeah, Boston in among all these rumors, and they really didn't do anything other than adding Pat Maroon, which means they'll likely go far in the playoffs just because mm-hmm. they have him. So
they should, yeah. They got Pat Maroon. They added Andrew Peake. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's it.
I mean, there's no need to mess with it. I mean, I look on paper and I don't know how a team whose top two centers are Charlie Coyle and Pavel Zacha are where
right.
they are.
that's the thing, right? Yeah. Like one, I think the fact that that's true means David Pastrnak should probably be more prominent yeah. in the MVP situation, the MVP conversation, or the goalies. But I think with the goalies, it's hard to separate them.
Swayman's, I think, taking the reins there. But mm-hmm. regardless, it's not like Allmark's been bad either. I think that's why he was in trade conversations, is that the Bruins felt like they could kind of roll with Swayman now and bolster somewhere else in their lineup. Because, listen, mm-hmm. as good as inconsistent as Coyle and Zacha have been, that's not ideal against some of the other teams you're going to match up against in the playoffs. So it's a tough one, but I know they were in on potentially Elias Lindholm, Pierre-Luc Dubois, a few others, and I just don't think it made sense. There weren't a lot of deals that made sense on deadline day for a few teams, right? Like obviously Vetrano doesn't move, because we heard that rumored deal of Henrique and Vetrano for Kako and a first from the Rangers, and they didn't want to pull the trigger on the first round pick, and ultimately they don't end up moving their first round pick anyway. So it's something they wanted to keep. I think we talked about this too mm-hmm. before, is the fact that it's in the sphere. They wanted to keep it. So that obviously that proved to actually be true. So and everybody was getting on Chris Drury for doing nothing, and at the end of the day he just probably was handcuffed and not being able to move his first round pick unless it was for something significant.
Are we assuming Chris Drury leaked the trade?
I mean, maybe. He's calling out for a desperate plea of help from the fans, saying, like, listen, man, it's not me. I'm trying. I still think he did good with what he ended up getting.
Oh, he had a perfectly fine day. Ruedel's all right. Wenberg's all right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I like Roslovich for them. It's a perfectly fine day. Like, I think
the thing is, too, I don't think they needed to go big like that. I really don't think they needed it. They're one of the deeper teams already. Like, you've already got Zibanejad, Trocheck down the middle. Like, do you really need what it would cost you to get Henrique or just get Wenberg? Like, for the cost, like, I'd almost rather have Wenberg and Roslovich rather than having to pay a first and Kako to get Henrique and Vetrano, right? Like,
right.
As much as I love Vetrano, they know what they had with him when he was there. And putting him in the same situation, like, he's going there to be, at best, this on the second line, if not on the third line and on the second power play, whereas here he's playing top line, top power play. Like, there's a reason, and again, I love him. Mm-hmm. He gets all the credit for the way he's played this year, but he is playing an elevated role than really anywhere he would have gone. Right, he's dropping down a role wherever you go.
Yeah, I think it depends. You know, I mean, I think if he goes to Winnipeg, he's a guaranteed second line guy.
Yeah, like if he had gone instead of Toffoli.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, no, I think it's interesting. I think that you're right that they're a deep team and they don't necessarily need to mess with what they have, but I do think there is something to be said also for, like, it's never a bad thing to have the extra talent.
Nope.
Especially, you know, I mean, Panarin's getting older, Zibanejad's getting older, like, you know, they only have 2 years left of Shesterkin on that deal, including this one, right? But he's only signed for one more year after that. He's extension eligible this summer. Mm-hmm. So, like, I do think there is something to be said for the idea of capitalizing. And I do think there's something to be said of the idea that I don't think the East is super strong this year. I think the West is clearly, at the top, a better conference. You know, and then you add in the fact that, like, you are looking at a situation where Carolina literally did the one thing everybody's been asking them to do for four fucking years, which is get somebody who can score goals.
In the playoffs specifically, mm-hmm. too.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, as much as, like, you know, you could argue a starting goaltender would be as helpful, I really do think that Rod Brind'Amour is a good enough coach and that that team is good enough overall that if you can add the possibility of someone who can score 10 to 12 goals in a 16-game, 20-game span... Mm-hmm. I think you have to do it, right? I think
you say that too.
Yeah, which, you know, we can we can argue about that. I'm just glad he's healthy.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think having someone who could reasonably be a Conn Smythe winner, right? Like, there's a world in which he's a Conn Smythe winner for them.
Oh, I think there's a high possibility he could be that guy for them. Just his track record in the playoffs, right? Like, mm-hmm. I don't think there's a front runner on that team. Like, he's in that mix with guys like Aho and Svechnikov to potentially be, you know, the top choice for a Conn Smythe winner if Carolina was to go all the way. So, and you could maybe give him the slight edge again because of his track record in the playoffs.
2 years ago, 21-22 postseason. He had 8 goals in 7 games.
Yeah. Yeah, he's him in the playoffs, man. He is.
He had 13 the first year, which is when they won the second cup. He had 10 in 12 the next year. 1 goal in 4, 1 goal in 4, 1 goal in 6, 8 goals in 7.
He's got like 38 and 50.
34. So... 34 and 58.
Yeah. It's crazy. And
he's got 34 goals in 6 postseason runs. That's wild. Good for him. Let's see how many are game winners. 8 are game winners. He's got a shorty. He's got 5 power play goals. Yeah, 28 of his goals have been at even strength. That's exactly the guy you want on your fucking team.
Yeah, and there's one thing the Hurricanes have been criticized for is like a lot of guys not showing up and Svechnikov not showing up and in the playoffs and getting things done and having reliable goal scorers in the playoffs and the moves they've made in the past haven't panned out. So to get a guy
it's also
who
a lot easier
that...
to key in on Svechnikov in the playoffs, right?
Yeah,
you're much more invested in hard matching and things like that. Like, because you know, in the playoffs when you play them, if you can shut down Svechnikov and Aho, you're fine. Mm-hmm. You know, and even Aho is a good player, but he's not actually as prolific a goal scorer as you might think.
No.
You know, I think he's got. I don't think he's ever had a 40 goal season. I don't know that he's had a 35 goal season.
I don't think so,
Sebastian.
I think he might have just scraped over 30.
24, 29, 30, 38, 24, 37, 36, and he's got 24 this year. So it looks like he's on pace for another 30 goal season this year. So that's good. That's not nothing. That's really good. But I still think you're, you know, between him and Svechnikov, you know, if all you have to do is shut down that one line, which is why they keep fucking adding D'Angelo and Brent Burns, and they were in on Carlson's because they're trying to generate offense from fucking wherever they can. So.
Yeah, and instead of going on the defense this time, they actually added
an actual forward.
Proper goal scoring threat.
Yeah.
Okay, let's bounce back to I'll call it the first trade that kicked everything off. It's February 28th. The first trade, the one before that was February 22nd. Then we're looking at the Monahan trade way back in early February. So, Chris Tanev to the Dallas Stars for Artem Grishnikov, a second and a third, and the third's conditional. And the picks only transferred of Dallas to advance to the Stanley Cup final. So more than likely, it's a second in Artem Grishnikov for Chris Tanev at 75% retained because he went to the Devils first, cost Dallas a fourth-round pick to do so. I like this deal for Dallas. We talked about it a little bit when it happened. I really like the fit for him there to add a defenseman like him to the roster. But you'd mentioned to me you thought that Calgary should have got more. For Chris Tanev.
Yeah, I don't understand how they didn't get a first-round pick for the best defenseman available. I don't understand. I like, again, like, the best way that I can think of... Because I do think that when you see teams add rentals, this is the type of thing you have to think about, right? To me, Chris Tanev is the type of player that lets Miro Heiskanen win a Conn Smythe.
Yeah.
Like, Chris Tanev and Miro Heiskanen as your first pair is not the best first pair in hockey. I you know what I mean? That's just not what it is. But there are very few pairs that are as balanced and as effective, right? Assuming that they can play in chemistry, right? Yeah. You know, as long as like they can play off each other. But there's, again, like I always keep thinking about the fact that when Quinn Hughes came into the league, he played with Chris Tanev. That's the guy that he played with to develop into the guy that we've seen him become. Chris Tanev is so fucking smart. He's been such a great defender. He's, you know, he's kind of Gudas without the recklessness and at a higher level, I think. Like, he's a better defenseman than Gudas. And he doesn't have the kind of reckless violence that, you know, I love about Radko Gudas. He's awesome. Like, I just think Chris Tanev is so fucking good. And the idea that you had the best, like, is he worse than Matthias Ekholm?
No.
I don't think so, right? They're pretty even to me. And Edmonton gave up a first.
Yeah, but that's Edmonton.
No, but still, but like, especially if you're Calgary in this situation and you know you're selling, how do you not get a first round pick? Like, I don't, and then
at the very least, conditional, right?
Right.
Conditional second that could go to a first or something like that.
Yeah, and then to find out after the fact that the reason they didn't get a first is because Edmonton said you have to take back Cody Ceci and they said no. What are you fucking doing? You don't, what, just take back Cody Ceci. You're not going to be good.
No, you're selling anyway, so.
Yeah, or call the Ducks and offer up a third round pick or some bullshit for Cody Ceci. Like, what are we doing?
I'm surprised he didn't come back in the Henrik deal, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I expected him to too. But I think they couldn't improve upon him, so they, you know, they stuck with him because he's fine. Like, he's fine. He's not good, but he's fine.
Yeah.
You know, he's better than Lyubushkin, right?
You would think? Well, that's the next one. Ducks got a third round pick for Lyubushkin from the Leafs. He walked his way through Carolina to get an extra 50% off, or extra 25% off, I guess you'd say. So 75% retained. Lyubushkin goes to the Leafs. The Ducks get a third round pick. Nice little bit of business. Third round picks in 2025. But listen, good piece of business. Again, moving a pending unrestricted free agent out the door. Guy you brought in for this season, you get, again, in for really nothing, and you get a third round pick out of it at the end of the day. He played well for the Ducks. Was one of the better signings that they brought in the season. Just kind of fit well in the team. And you get a good asset out of it. Like, anything we can get at least a third-round pick for something, for a player like that, that's a pretty sweet deal. So I'm happy with that one.
Yeah, it was a perfect trade. The whole thing worked out perfectly. They traded a 25 fourth-round pick that wasn't theirs. It was Minnesota's, to Buffalo. They brought in Ilya Lyubushkin, who's a Russian player. He played 1,000 minutes, largely with their Russian rookie. They traded him for a better pick in the same draft. And that's the end of it. Mm-hmm. It was great. It was incredible. It didn't... When people talk about things like asset management, this to me is the perfect version of that concept. You turned... Because we talked about it at the time. There are some people who didn't like the trade. And we said it at the time. If a fourth round pick turns into Ilya Lyubushkin, you are so happy with that fourth round pick. They took it, they made it him, and then they used that to get a third round pick. They basically traded a fourth round pick for a third round pick.
Yeah.
And all it cost them was 1,000 minutes of ice time, which they were going to have to give to somebody anyways.
Yeah.
Like, it was great. It was perfect. I don't think... It's not a home run, right?
Because it just never was going to be.
Right, but it's exactly what you were hoping that they would do.
Mm-hmm. You're just hoping for a win at that point, and you got more than you put in for it. So that's a win. Mm-hmm. You were never never going to get more than a third for this guy, so you basically got the top value you possibly could get for a player like this. And like you said, it didn't cost you anything other than just playing this guy. And to be fair, he played well, and he helped the Ducks win some games this year. So, again, you've got a win-win there. As he played well for your team, and he helped you improve and allow some younger defensemen to develop in the AHL to start the year. And then when it was time to move on from him, you got more than you put in for him back. So it's
100%. It was exactly the way you wanted it to go.
Yeah, good asset management. This next one, this one's one of the interesting ones for me, because I just feel like it could end up being a lot better than it looks on the surface, and that's the Vegas Golden Knights getting Anthony Mantha from the Capitals for a second and a fourth at 50% retained.
Mm-hmm.
He's had a good, quietly good year. Oh, I think he's around or at 20 goals with
Washington. Yeah, I think he's at like 18 or 19.
Doesn't he just feel like the guy, and it's just because it's Vegas, that he'll go to this team, and whether it's for the rest of the year or in the playoffs, he's just going to go off. He's just going to pop off for some ridiculous run and fulfill that potential that he had when he first got drafted, mm-hmm. and that he had this ridiculous shot. He could be a 30 or 40 goal scorer. Like, I'm not saying he's going to do that, but like, he's going to have a run here, I feel like, with Vegas playing either first line or second line, whether he's playing with Carlson or he's playing with Eichel, or he's, God forbid, he's playing with freaking Thomas Hertl now. Like, he's going to... Mm-hmm. He just feels like that type of guy, right? That this is... It's a lot to give up for Anthony Mantha. We were talking at one point about this guy being a cap dump to the Ducks in some deals, and then you pay a second and a fourth to get him. I mean, the second's this year, the fourth is in 2026. But yeah, man, he could be, he's one to keep an eye on, I think, and see how this one develops.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's a really good trade for Vegas. I think it's the type of trade that if it doesn't work, you're like, all right, we gave up a second and a fourth round pick, and we did it for a guy that we thought could help us win immediately. You don't feel bad about it. You're like, okay, it didn't work, but I don't think you regret the trade, right? No. And if it does work out, this is a guy who could have two or three games over the course of a season where, you know, he's maybe special for 15 minutes, right? Like, if they win the cup and we're like, oh, that second round series, Anthony Mantha had two goals to, you know, get them to 3-2 or whatever over Edmonton, right? Just whatever. Yeah, that totally sounds like a real thing. Again, he's not on that Gensel or Tanev level where you could see him being a reason you won the whole cup. But he is definitely a player who is of a caliber and quality where he can win you a game, and that's what you need from depth players. You need them to steal you a game here or there. The way I saw it. Not win him a game, but he can steal you a game. He can just have a couple of good shifts, score two goals.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if he scores four goals in the whole playoffs, but two of them are game winners,
yeah.
Thank you, good night.
Yep, yeah, it's a win. Yeah, and again, it's a pure rental, and again, Vegas is trying to repeat. For like they're going for it. They were the team. I mean, they go for it every year, it seems mm-hmm. like, but they made some risks, and this is a risk for sure. But again, it's with every Vegas move, it just feels like it's going to pay off at some point.
I'd say it's a gamble more than a risk, and I say that because you're right. Well, like, everything has its own risk, but this doesn't feel like this to me is a risky move.
No, for sure.
It's a move that probably won't, you know, turn out to be something incredibly special. Mm-hmm. But there's enough upside there that it's like, yeah, fuck it, it's two picks in two separate drafts. You know, okay, who cares?
Do you think weird that he went for less than Tarasenko? Or he went for more than Tarasenko went for less than him? Or are we just thinking of Tarasenko by name at this point?
No, I think it has more to do with the Senators don't fucking know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Like, I don't...
I mean, at best...
To me, it has more to do with where he came from.
Yeah. At best, Tarasenko turns into two-thirds, but it's a third and a fourth right now. Florida has to win the Stanley Cup for it to become another third.
and that fourth is in 2024 right now, that third would actually be turn into a 2026 third. So it'd be a 2025 and a 2026 third round pick from the Panthers. Which, I mean, if you're Ottawa, it's probably better because there's a better chance that it's not going to be, you know, it'll be an earlier pick at that point. But I love the deal for Florida. I think Tarasenko is a great depth add to that team. But it gets another weird one by the Sens, another one they lose out on. And again, it's like right after, day after the Mantha trade, you think that would set the value for a player like Tarasenko, and they immediately get less for him than what was paid the other day. So it's an interesting one. I do like it a lot for Florida. He didn't, you know, he looked like he had some adjustments to make up in that first game. I watched that game, his first game for Florida, but
We're about to get to my favorite trade of the whole time.
I know. The one guy you were hoping would make his way to Anaheim, right?
Well, let's calm down a second. That's not what I said.
No. So it's Ryan Johansson and a 2025 first round pick, conditional that it's top 10 protected to the Flyers, for Sean Walker and a fifth round pick to the Colorado Avalanche.
It rocked, dude. I'm so happy. The Brian Johansson experiment failed spectacular. It failed so fucking bad that Danny Briere couldn't even eat another 50% of his deal and get someone to take it. He literally said today in his press conference, we were willing to retain and we couldn't make anything happen. Ryan Johansson cost
the team $2 million to
sucks
take him.
So bad that they couldn't give Ryan Johansson away for $2 million.
Apparently there was some stuff too that he was not the greatest guy to be in the locker room with either. So that
that's
I'm sure adds into it. Like I find it hard that nobody would take him for $2 million, but
dude, he sucks so bad now, and it's so funny. Like I always thought he was overrated.
Oh, yeah.
I loved the initial trade. When they did the Johansson-Jones trade, I was like, that fucking rips. That's a perfect trade. Both teams get what they needed. Columbus won that trade going away. Johansson was nowhere near what Nashville needed him to be.
No.
He has never been better than a two center. And they needed him to be the 1C, and he never was. You know what's insane? Again, like, we were. How is it Boston not all over this?
Yeah. I don't know. There's something there. There's something we're not privy to knowing about with.
That's insane.
Because $2 million.
God, he's such a douchebag. That's so funny.
You probably could have got him for like a sixth, seventh round pick, like just to get rid of him. There's something else there. I would imagine that nobody went and got him because there were definitely teams that could use them. Again, like you said, Boston's a team that could have used them, even as a third line center. Like, that's an upgrade for them. And it's just not something I think they want to add to that locker room, I imagine.
God, that rocks. And then, on top of that, Colorado follows that trade with our next trade, which is Bowen Byram for Casey Mittelstadt, who is going to be their 2C now. Who is younger and is going to be an RFA this summer or UFA?
Mittelstadt, I think he's an RFA this summer.
Let's find out, Mr. Casey. He will be, because his qualifying offer will be $2.6 million. Mm-hmm. God, it rocks. It just to watch Ryan Johansson fucking flame out like that feels so good. I don't even care how awful it makes me as a human being.
Bowen Byram scored in his first game.
And he did.
For Buffalo.
What did you make of that for Buffalo?
I like it for Buffalo in the sense that, like, I think Bowen Byram is the better player and has the better potential of the two. I like the fit for what Colorado needs, right? Like, they don't really need Byram right now. They need help down the middle, and I think Mittelstadt gets a lot of criticism for how he started his career and the struggles he had, but he had a great year last year and he's had a good year this year too. So like, if you base it on the last couple of years and you look at his recent success, it's a good move for Colorado. But
I don't know, man. I still like. I still feel like there's more there for Bowen Byram. I think it's a weird fit for Buffalo with Rasmus Dahlin and Owen Power there. Now you've got Dahlin, Power. You've got what's his name, Samuelson. You've got Bowen Byram all on the left side, and I think on the right side is just Yoki Haru is really the only kind of main guy Connor that they Clifton, have.
Yeah,
just a bunch of depth guys after that.
That's the part of it for me I can't get packed. Like, they just didn't need another left-handed defenseman. No. And maybe they are taking the, you know, early Vegas route of the handedness is overrated, you bet on talent, right? And which, sure. And maybe being able to play Bowen Byram so much higher up the lineup is going to be better for him, right? Maybe it's better for him to play second pair minutes on his offside than third pair minutes on his strong side. Mm-hmm. You know, but again, like, he's a creative offense. He's a creative defenseman, an offensive, you know, they've got, they're paying Dahlin and Power all this money. And we already talked about how they're already going to have to relegate Owen Power to the second unit. Like, are they going to run a two defenseman power play unit? Like, it's crazy to me. I don't understand the fit. I don't understand how they get the most out of it. I think the trade in a vacuum is a good trade because, like you said, Bowen Byram is young and talented. But I don't see how this works long term. I just don't see where this goes for them.
Yeah, it's not like you can move. You want to or should consider moving Dahlin or Owen Power at this point, and you just got Bowen Byram, so it's a weird fit. And I mean, it gives you some assets to look at moving in the future, and maybe you do want to look into moving Owen Power if things don't go the way you kind of hope for him. But it's way, way, way too soon for that, and I felt there was a lot of other needs. I'd rather just keep Mittelstadt around if I was the Sabres and just have him there rather than bring in another left shot defenseman. But
I mean, I'm sure they trade Mittelstadt and you try to get a pick or something.
I'm sure they felt like the offer was something they couldn't refuse because of I'm sure of how they view Bowen Byram, and it's one of those that you say, we'll figure it out, but like, we have to take this. Like, that's just the way it feels. Is I don't think they expected that to be presented to them. And when something like that comes across the table, you kind of have to take it, and it's something you'll figure out, like you said, whether you play a guy in the right on the offside or you figure it out down the road. But it's just one of those deals that you don't expect to come across, and you have to take it when it does.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's fair. I think if you just say it boils down to you're not going to get a better trade than for Bowen Byram. Okay, yeah. That's fine. Okay, fair enough. The fit is insane to me. The only place that would have been funnier for him to go would have been to fucking Ottawa for the same reason.
Yeah, because they're trying to ship guys out already. They bring in Jacob Chychrun and they're already trying to ship him out the door.
Yep.
Wild stuff. Adam Henrique's up next. First round pick this year from the Oilers and the 2025 fifth. That would turn to a fourth if Edmonton won the Stanley Cup. He made his way through Tampa to get an extra 25% retained. Tampa got a fourth round pick in 2025. That's conditional that if the Oilers win the Cup, because that fourth actually would go to Anaheim, then that fourth turns into a 2026 fourth round pick. So it's just a condition based on the fact that if the Ducks get that pick, then it turns into a 2026 first. The Oilers also get Sam Carrick, and your favorite part of this deal is the Ducks felt the need to retain 50% of Sam Carrick's $900,000 car, $850,000 contract. They felt the need to use a retention slot there on that, which is ridiculous, which is wild. I feel like it's a waste of retention spot, but I guess it must have been needed to get the deal done.
It just bugs me. It just, from a process standpoint, it just feels so, so ridiculous. You're telling me they couldn't have sent somebody down. They couldn't have picked up, sent a player back. Like, there was just ways that this didn't have to happen. And the idea like this didn't even occur to me until I was looking at the layout of it right now. Sam Carrick is worth less in theory than 1.45 million dollars. They are guaranteed a pick better than what the pick Anaheim is guaranteed in Tampa. So Tampa Bay is guaranteed a better pick than Anaheim in for just retaining half of Henrique. For retaining half on Carrick and including him, all Anaheim is guaranteed is a fifth.
Yeah.
I don't understand. Now, if you tell me the reason it's a first and not a second is because of the – like, I maybe, but I would have rather taken back a bad contract. Like, I just
– it's just hard to wrap my head around that Sam Carrick made the difference of it being a second to a first.
I don't understand it. I don't understand it. And there's a guy on Twitter, he goes by Rebuilding Blog, and he said that this deal is paying Anaheim to burn that third retention slot so they can't use it for anything else. And if that's the case, I don't think Anaheim asked for enough. They should have gotten another pick. They should have, even if that was the conditional pick, right? They should have gotten something else. How have they been trying to give away Philip Broberg all year, and we can't even pick him up in this?
Yeah.
Like, what are we doing? I don't understand.
If you're burning that slot, like, you have, you're foregoing the opportunity to get another pick by doing what Tampa Bay did, right? So, like, you should be at least compensated by it, but I don't know. It's one that doesn't make sense. Then the next one is one of the three big moves by Vegas. The one I guess I didn't expect. And Noah Hanifin going. Oh.
Hey, there you are.
Hola.
What happened?
I don't know. All you said is, oh, that's not good. And you disappeared. And then you said the call dropped.
Okay. Oh, I'm so... Yeah, I'm good. All right. We just picking back up?
Yeah. I'll pick it back up. Okay. 3, 2, 1. Yeah, the one... For me, this next one is, I guess it'd be the first of the three big moves, or I guess one of two big moves for Vegas, is Noah Hanifin going to the Vegas Golden Knights. Again, by way of being 75% retained, sorry, 25% of which was retained by the Philadelphia Flyers. So it's Hanifin and Mikhail Vorobyev that goes to the Golden Knights. Philadelphia gets a fifth-round pick for their troubles, and Calgary gets Danil Miromanov. I probably butchered that. A third-round pick that's conditional, and a first-round pick in 2026 that's conditional. The third-round pick condition is that it upgrades to a 2025 second if Vegas wins one playoff round, which that's probably going to be a second. And the conditions on the first round pick, I think this one is right. Yeah, the first round picks is if it traded by March 10th, 2024, or if the pick is top 10, Calgary will instead receive a 2026 first round pick. I love that. That flexibility there. Like, it's such a Vegas move to include, like, if we move this pick, like, you get another one, like, yep, instead. So it gives the, I don't think I've ever seen that, to be honest. I have to check. Did they end up moving that one in the Hurdle deal?
Yeah. So, and apparently they came out and said the reason that language was that specific is because they had already started talking about the Hurdle deal.
Oh, no, they didn't move it. Or it was 2025.
Yeah. First. So they traded a conditional 2025, which could be the 2026. And then they traded the 2025 for Hanifin, for Hurdle. So Hanifin is now the 2026 pick.
Love it. I love that.
Oh, man. Yeah, and it says results. Vegas traded the 2025 first-round pick. Calgary received Vegas' 2026 first-round pick instead. It's such a Vegas move. Love the addition.
Rocks.
You've now got Theodore, Pietrangelo, Hanifin, Alec Martinez, who's injured right now. But when he's back, you've got White Cloud. You've got Nick Hague. Like...
And what it does is it means... I believe, actually, let me look real quick before I say this out loud and sound like a goober. Hannafin's pending UFA, that's right.
Yeah.
But.
They'll find a way to extend.
They're going to eat. He's going to get Alec Martinez's money and then some.
Yeah.
Alec Martinez is coming off the books for 5.25. You know?
Yep. They'll somehow figure
they're
it out.
They're not going to re-sign Marchessault and his fucking $5 million contract. Like, this is Marchessault's last year there.
Yeah, no, they can't. I mean, he's been excellent this year, but he's going to go somewhere else to get paid, I think so. Especially now you've got hurdle money on the books, right? You kind of have to, so.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the replacement, really. In Marchessault's production is going to be Thomas Hurdle coming into that lineup. Be interesting to see what they do when he comes back and beyond, because they have Eichel, number one center. Hurdle's going to be number two. William Karlsson's a little bit expensive and probably too good to be a third-line center, so does he shift to the wing? What do you do long-term? That'll be interesting to see what they do there.
Here's the thing. The first year they made it all the way to the Cup, he was their third-line center.
Mm-hmm. I just think long-term, you don't want to be paying a guy that much to be a third-line center, right? I don't know.
Cap's going to go up $6 million.
Hmm. We'll see.
Right, I mean, but like, I don't know, William Karlsson making 5.9 to be the best third line setter in the league, like, I don't know, that's not the worst thing in the world. Like, I don't get me wrong, I 100% was like, oh, they're trading William Karlsson this summer, and then I saw that they have enough money that I'm like, oh, they'll probably
they don't have to if they don't want to.
Yeah, I don't think they're gonna actually have to at the end of the day. So, I mean, shit, all they have to do is trade Robin Lehner's fucking contract. He makes $5 million next year. Move that, you're done.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to have other things to do, but, you know, I think that, you know. Plus, with retention, Hurdle only makes 6.75 against the cap.
Oh, yeah, I forgot they retained for 6 years on
that. So, anyways. Oh, man. The Hanifin trade's great. The rich get richer. I don't know how much more there is to say about it than the fact that it's just a great trade for them.
We kind of briefly talked Perreault, Misak, but it's obviously a Ducks trade, so we should revisit it a little bit more. Not surprising. I do feel like, as much as, like, listen, we need a goal scorer. Perreault was kind of the one main go-to goal-scoring winger prospect we had. Do feel like it was time to move on, and maybe with now getting Cutter Gauthier into the fold, Jan Misak fits a bit more of what this team could need moving forward, and Perreault fits a bit more to what Montreal could need. So it feels like it could be, whether they pan out or not, like on the surface, a win-win for both teams.
Yeah,
I think I'd rather Perreault, but like I mentioned this today, I think Perreault still has the higher upside. If he makes the NHL, it's going to be as a top six forward. I just can't see the way he plays and his commitment to certain sides of the game. I just can't see Jacob Perreault being a bottom six forward. Whereas I think if Misak makes it, it's as a bottom six forward. And that's more likely the path he's going to get to. I don't really see him being a top six guy. So if you're the Ducks, you fill out some of the bottom six depth, and you hopefully get a contributor there, which when we get to Pat Verbeek's comments, he's looking for guys who can contribute in the bottom six and score on a consistent basis. And if you're Montreal, you get another kind of young injection that hopefully can be a guy who can contribute in your top six. So, and he's from Montreal, which they obviously love. They're the Minnesotas of Canada, right? So.
Yeah, I don't know. It's fine. I guess if what you're worried about is that your third line doesn't score enough goals, why would you trade the guy with the goal scoring upside?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's my one. Yeah,
that's my right. Because, like,
I would have loved to see him get another shot. That's my thing too.
is we saw him play one game for Anaheim.
Yeah, like, I you know, and I get it. Like, maybe it was time to cut bait. Maybe it was time to move on. I understand that. But it's hard to square his comments with this trade in so much as they got back a guy who's not expected to produce. He's expected to be a little bit more do-it-all and just kind of tools. And it's like, that's fine. Those guys are really useful and very valuable. I'm not, you know, but I just... It's weird that he specifically called out the lack of production from the bottom of the lineup and then traded away a guy who could fill a goal-scoring role. In the, like, again, I can't stand him, but I'll point to this. Daniel Sprong's a fourth-line player, but he scores a lot of goals.
Yep.
He has 20 goals this year playing less than 14 minutes a game. Like... maybe Jacob Pearl's shot isn't as good or whatever, but I think he's probably a better player, like, so in theory or whatever. So I just, like, why wouldn't you rather do that? And I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. Maybe it just wasn't working. Maybe Pearl asked him to move on. Whatever it is. It just feels like in a very interesting choice and a very, like, safe trade in a sense where it's just like, oh, we think this guy can be toolsy and do a lot of different things. So fine.
Oh, and he played with Mason McTavish, so.
Sure, they played for what, Sarnia together?
Hamilton. Yeah, so.
It's fine. It's fine. It doesn't make sense, but it's fine.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, it's one of those deals, right? So it, I'm interested to see how Misak does. Hopefully, at the very least, it gives some more opportunities to guys like Sasha Pastorov in the top six. In San Diego to get things going. But the next one is, I guess, the one outside of Hurdle I'd call the blockbuster. We talked about it a little bit, but Jake Guentzel going to the Carolina Hurricanes. Jake Guentzel and Ty Smith going to the Carolina Hurricanes. And Michael Bunting, Vasily Ponomarev, Cruz Lucius, one of the best names, and Ville Koivunen, along with a 2024 second round pick and a 2024 fifth round pick, both conditional going back to the Pittsburgh Penguins. The conditions are the pick will be upgraded to a 2024 first if Carolina makes it to the Stanley Cup final, and Pittsburgh will receive the fifth round pick if Carolina wins the Stanley Cup. So at the minimum, it's a second, the three prospects, and Bunting. At the maximum, it's Bunting, the three prospects, a first and a fifth. So,
right.
What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense. I think you can argue the returns may be a little underwhelming, but it was always going to be...
You remember it's a rental too, right? So that's the
yeah,
thing I think a lot of people forgot with this.
Yeah, you know, they weren't allowed to try to work out a extension before the trade, apparently. You know, I mean, again, if you want to criticize the process of the trade, maybe you say, if you win the Stanley Cup, I want a fourth round pick or something like that. But that part is fine. I don't really think that's much of a big deal. I think Carolina gets exactly the player they needed, right? We've been saying they've been looking for like four fucking years. Everybody's been trying to get them to add a goal scorer. Well, they added a goal scorer. So, you know, it's a great trade for them. It's a great trade for them. It gives someone, again, like, it gives Rod Brindamore somebody who can, like, do something. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to be huge. I think it'll be interesting to see how they deploy him. But, you know, overall, I don't know how you don't love this trade for Carolina.
Yeah, no, I love it for Carolina. Like, I don't hate it for Pittsburgh. Like, they knew they were going to move him. The thing I think that I hate the most about it is it feels like Dubas went quantity over quality. They wanted to stock the prospect pool with, because they really don't have anything, because they've been used to shipping these guys out the door to bring in other players. But, you know, there's guys like Alexander Nikishin and Pyotr Kochetkov and Jack Drury and other guys that you could potentially get that are higher up in the Hurricanes prospect pool, especially for a guy, even if he's a rental, as high profile as Jake Guentzel. I like Ville Koivunen, but even then, like, I'm not sure if there's really much there beyond a middle six player at the NHL level. Same with...
You know what I will say? So. You know what fucking they didn't do? Is get a 26-year-old prospect and act like that was a fucking win like Calgary did.
Yeah.
That's the thing I forgot to say in that trade is the prospect, the big prospect that they got in the trade for Hanifin is 26 years old.
Yeah, Grushnikov.
Yeah, I'm all for defensemen take longer to develop. Bro, that dude's got a mortgage. Like, what are we talking about?
Yeah, I know. It's tough. Like, again, the headliner not being a first round, getting a first round pick back for this guy, I think that was a tough look for Pens fans to, a tough pill for them to swallow, not visibly being a first. You know, Carolina has to make it to the final for it to become a first.
See, I think that would have been, I was thinking about that earlier today, or last night maybe, I don't know. Well, it's all the same, doesn't matter. But I was thinking about it, you could make a legitimate argument that maybe they should have been either win the Stanley Cup or extend him, and it's a first. Right? I think that should have been the second condition, to me, because it's look, either you're going to win the cup and get exactly what you want, or you're going to extend him because it worked out. And if it worked out, then it's worth the first round pick.
Yeah, no, I see it. I think I don't hate it. I think my main gripe from Pittsburgh is I would have tried to maybe go a little bit more quality over quantity if you possibly could, and get instead of getting three guys, getting kind of one of their better prospects from their pool if possible, Morrow, somebody like that. But I have to imagine that the reason it pivoted to more guys over one or two guys higher up in the prospect pool is it just wasn't something Carolina was comfortable with giving up.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. And, I think Dubas made the comment about they liked these young guys because they're maybe a little bit closer to being able to contribute, but also it gives them flexibility going into the draft. Maybe they can move one of these guys, or maybe they can move some other guys because they have these guys. I get the idea here. I just think... Adam Gretz, who writes for Bleacher Report and writes about the Penguins, he talked about this. When you're trading a premium asset, it's always better to get the best possible asset you can get as opposed to the best quantity of prospects of assets if you can get. If it's lower end guys, I think it's perfectly fine to go, I'll take three thirds or you know what I mean? EA 24 type shit. But for a guy like Gensel, I think you would rather have a higher quality prospect and a guarantee. I would have rather just had Bunting and Jack Drury in a first. Mm-hmm. And even if I had to send back a fourth or something the other direction, right? Also, that's the other thing I wanted to talk about. Is this the most NHL 24 draft or trade deadline ever? The number of sixth and seventh round picks that are just randomly going the other way to balance it out is so funny to me.
And picks in 2027 that are going to. Yeah, no, it definitely had that feel to it for sure.
Anyway, sorry, I was rambling.
No. The other deal is the Hurricanes deal as well that I wanted to talk about too, and that's Evgeny Kuznetsov going to Hurricanes for a third round pick. I think they had one clear need of what they needed to address for this team, and that was playoff production. You get that in Jake Gensel, you get that in Evgeny Kuznetsov. Kuznetsov has 29 goals, 67 points, and 87 playoff games. He had that one insane run with Caps when they won the Stanley Cup. He had 32 points in 24 games. So they bring in two guys who are proven playoff performers, both have won Stanley Cups. So that's the one thing I think I love and why I rate Carolina's deadline so highly, is that there was a clear indication of what they needed. And they didn't go out, and no offense to these guys, but they didn't go out and get the Pat Maroons and the guys who've just won cups, right? You hear that a lot of us, they're Stanley Cup champions, Eric Johnson, these guys have won cups, they've been around, and there's some merit to that, but these guys are performers, right? They are guys who put up points and can win you hockey games in the playoffs, and the Hurricanes noted they needed to do that, and I love both of these additions for them. I think they're going to pay off for them when it comes to playoff hockey time, and this is a team that has separated themselves from the pack and now put them up there with the Rangers as a team that can, from the East, that can go really far.
Yeah, 100%. I think it makes a lot of sense, the adding Kuznetsov and just giving them another body in the center that can, be creative and maybe take some pressure off. Again, you know, I don't understand completely how it did, the situation completely deteriorated to the point that it did in Washington, where they were waiving him and then, you know, sending him out the door at 50% retained. Like, but clearly it got there, and it looks like Carolina has a shot to be the benefit of it, you know, and adding a guy, like you said, with that kind of playoff track record is beneficial. Oh, excuse me. I'm so sorry. But yeah, adding a player like that is really beneficial for them. And shit, go.
No, it is for sure. Like, it's again, the thing I always rate highly about deadline acquisitions is when there's a clear need that they've addressed that they have, and then you go out and you just kind of blanket cover that with a few different acquisitions. It's not, we're going to put all our eggs in one basket, and listen, putting all your eggs in a Jake Gensel basket to improve your playoff success is not the worst thing you could possibly do, but they said, okay, like, we're going to go out and get the big fish here, but we're also going to get some more cover, and they doubled down on what they needed. And that was pretty much all they did. You know, they felt like they were strong in all their areas. I think, you know, goaltending was something they explored, but the options out there weren't the greatest, and they had Freddie Anderson coming back from injury, and running Freddie and Peter Kachetkov is not the worst thing you can do. There's definitely some worse tandems out there, and the prices on guys like Ullmark and Markstrom just wasn't something that was going to get done. So their main need beyond that was addressing some playoff production, and they doubled down and probably got the two best guys available that could help them with that. So again, I love what the Hurricanes usually do, and whether it's the draft or free agency, they're kind of right up there with Vegas of the way they're run and the way they run their business and the moves that they make. And you know, it's no surprise that they've walked out of deadline day as one of the winners.
Yeah, 100%. They're a smart organization. I think they could certainly benefit from being a bit more aggressive, but it's hard to say that the sustained success that they've had isn't, again, I think, you know, they're at risk of being kind of ducksy if they don't make more improvements to this team. But, you know, Gensel is a very clear plus, and Kuznetsov is a very exciting upside play. So, you know, I get it. I think it's a lot. There's enough to like. I think they're going to still need to address their goaltending over the summer, but what are you going to do?
Yeah. And that's where you look, I think, at guys like Markstrom and others, that and Ullmark again, and see what's available, what the prices are in the summer there. Tyler Toffoli, second 2025 and third in 2024 to the Devils, and Tyler Toffoli goes his way to Winnipeg Jets at 50% retained. Really good deal for the Jets, a team that I did not expect to be where they are, but the Sean Monahan trades worked out for them. They bring in Tyler Toffoli for some depth scoring, and they brought in, I believe, Colin Miller later from Winnipeg as well, so three, or from New Jersey as well, so three really good additions to the team, three depth additions. Tyler Toffoli is going to be a good second line contributor to that team, and they look like a scary one, man. They look like one, they're no joke, the Jets are this year. The way Hellebuck's playing, what they're getting from their defense, and then obviously up front, Scheifele, Ehlers, Connor, now Toffoli, Niederreiter in that mix as well. They're a fun one.
Yeah, man. I mean, look, Tyler Toffoli comes into this team to this point with the same number of goals as Kyle Connor. I think the punch that he is going to provide, like, man, I mean, we just did this, what, an episode or two ago, where I did my little rant about how I hate that dude. And I kind of low-key hate his dog, because I think that's the only reason people pretend he's cool. But yeah, like, I think he's a great ad for them. I think he's a really smart pickup. I think he gives them exactly what they want. They didn't have to break the bank. And it puts him one step closer to having played for every Canadian team. I think he only has Edmonton and Toronto left. I think he's now played for five because he's played for Vancouver, he's played for Calgary, he's played for Montreal.
Played for Ottawa?
No, he hasn't played for Ottawa, I don't think. No! Damn you, Tyler.
He's still up there, though. He's
still what do we got? Vancouver, Montreal. Yeah. Dude, he basically started his career in L.A., and then he got traded, and he was in Canada until this year, and now he's back in Canada. He's doing his career backwards. He should have spent the second half in L.A., although I bet you if you ask him, he met his wife, and being in your being rich and in your 20s in L.A. is probably cool as hell.
Yeah, no, I'm sure he's doing just fine. No, good one. I like that one for the Jets. We briefly mentioned this. We don't have to dive back into this one. I did like the Roslovich deal. It's kind of a depth add for the Rangers to get something done. I feel like they got a little bit desperate to add a forward, and I like that deal for them. But then the big one and the other big one is the big surprise of the day, and that was Thomas Hertl.
Nika Ahodiuk to Calgary for a fifth round. Okay.
Thomas Hertl and 2/3, 2025 third and a 2027 third. Hertl at 17.1% retained over the next 6 years. And the Sharks got back the Golden Knights' 32nd overall, so first round selection from last year, David Edstrom, and a 2025 first round pick from the Vegas Golden Knights for Thomas Hertl. What do you think, man? Because I felt like when I first saw this, I read it as a first 2/3 David Edstrom for Thomas Hertl, and I thought, like, you know what, that's fine, that's fair. And then all of a sudden I see it's actually Hertl and the 2/3 going back for Edstrom and the 2025 first, which is going to be likely a late first as well.
I don't know, man. Like, I think San Jose fans have to find Doug Wilson, and I think they have to hang him. Like,
yeah,
what they could, like, I'm going to make a statement because this is something I've been pissed about for 2 years, and I want you to tell me how crazy it is. Isn't there a really good shot that San Jose could have Marco Rossi right now?
If they didn't draft...
If they'd have traded him 2 years ago instead of extending
him. Oh, yeah, right, to Minnesota. It's possible for sure. They could at least have something more than what they got here.
Like, that's... At least,
right? Like, that's the thing.
This is... Like, I get that Mike Greer is trying to make the most bad situation. I don't fault Mike Greer, considering he didn't sign this contract. But the idea that he gave up 2/3 and retained salary to keep this under $7 million for one of the better two-way top six centers in the league... Right, because he's clearly, we talked about this a little bit earlier, I don't think he's a genuine first-line center. Yeah. He's right on the line to me. I don't think there's quite enough offensive upside with him. But at his best, he is such a good two-way player that if he's your second-line center, you feel fucking great. Like, and he's going to make less than $7 million. Like, he's going to make less against the cap than Couturier does.
That's wild.
And they had to give up 2/3. And I don't love this for them. I really, this just feels like a bad thing got worse. Maybe they did the best they could, but, like, man, I don't know. I don't love it. And maybe you can talk me into them having to give up 1/3-round pick. Fucking 2/3-round yeah. picks is insane.
Yeah, and the thing, like, I know Vegas doesn't have a ton of top prospects, but, like,
David Edstrom doesn't move the needle too much for me. So it's to say you're getting a guy that they took 32nd overall, which I think at the time was still a reach, and then you're getting a pick that's likely going to be somewhere between 28 and 32 next year as well, because Vegas is going to be roughly the same roster, if not better, because they have Thomas Hurdle now. It's a tough look. It's a tough look to have to sell out some picks for that, for a team that should be hoarding as many picks as they can.
By the way, this is also a team whose third round pick this year belongs to Anaheim from the Henry Thrun trade.
Yeah.
So Anaheim is going to have the 65th pick in the draft.
Yeah, and it's a team who has Pittsburgh's first round pick, but they might not get it because it's top 10 protected, and Pittsburgh's
just
it's something. I mean, listen, I relish it. I love it. I love to see the Kings struggle. Love to see the Sharks struggle. So it's great to see, but it is some interesting asset management for sure. The fact that they have long term money retained in Carlson, Burns, and Hurdle now is just.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Vlasic works into that with the buyout, right? He's also money they owe to
he's still on the team. Players.
He's still on the team?
Yeah.
Jeez, I thought they bought him out.
Nope.
Wow.
He's the only guy left from when they were good. Him and Couture, I guess.
I bet you Joe Thornton's just somewhere hanging around the locker room every now and then.
That guy
can't hang him up. He's got to be around the locker room somewhere.
Yeah, no, fucking Mark Edward Vlasic, dude's going to make $7 million for 2 more years.
God, man, they have some just god-awful deals.
Mario Ferraro at 3.25. Well, they're going to have a lot of cap space this summer. Wow. LeBlanc is up, Hoffman is up, Kunin is up.
Amazing. Barabano. What are they
going to do? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know, man, but if Huberto doesn't play for them next year, what are we fucking doing?
You think he'd go there as a UFA?
Hey, John, do you want to play for a bad team that's in the winter all the time, or do you want to play a bad team in the Bay Area in California?
True.
For the record, both teams are going to suck. Like, I don't think it's a contest. I'm not even trying to be fun. Like, mm-hmm. What, you know? If he's not on this roster next year, what are we fucking doing here? Like, I think you have to pay through the fucking nose to get him off of your roster. Like, they should have to send multiple firsts to San Jose to do it, but, you know.
It's embarrassing. It's something else, the way that organization is run, for sure.
A 2, a 4, and a 6 year after this, including this year, because Brent Burns has 1 more year, and then 3 more years for Carlson, and 5 more years for Hurdle. Bro, what are we doing? And they fucking traded for Vitek Vanecek today for Kaapo Kähkönen.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't even get a pick. No. They just swapped goalies.
And they just took on more salary, too, right?
I don't know what Mike Greer is doing.
He's doing something, man. He's cooking something there. I don't know if it tastes good, though.
Jeez Louise, dude. We gotta hit up the Chef Reactions guy and have him tell us what this is. 0 out of 10. Would not eat.
Hawk, I don't know.
Diarrhea.
It's been shambles for the Sharks over the last little bit. And, like, I mean, they've got Bortolo, they've got Eklund, but beyond that, they really don't have too much else. Will Smith is on his way for them, but it's going to be a long, 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 long process for the Sharks to get anywhere close to being good again. Like, they, you know, if we talk about the Ducks being the closest team, the Kings kind of being still good and trying to extend that run, the Sharks are at as close to rock bottom as you can get, I think, at this point. Oh, we got you. We're back.
There we go. So, yeah, I don't know, man. It was a very weird and wild fucking deadline.
All right. Any trades we missed that you want to cover? Anyone you want to get into?
I don't think so, man. I think we pretty much hit everything that mattered. You know, Frankie didn't get moved. Gibby didn't get moved. Fowler didn't get moved. Strom didn't get moved. None of that is all that surprising. I think we kind of, there was enough noise around Frankie that we thought it might happen. But, you know, I know it's not the best, but like he wanted to be here. I'm glad he's here.
Yeah. At the end of the day, like if you weren't going to get something that blew your socks off, then I'm fine keeping him. You didn't have to move him. You can get some really good assets for him next year as a rental, right? Like, possibly the same as what you're getting offered this year, right? So I mean,
you could argue if he plays this well against next year, people would actually be willing to pay more because he'll have 2 years of showing that he can do it, whereas he hasn't played this well yet before.
Yep.
And he did underwhelm, I think, a little bit in his run with New York, although he wasn't put in a great position.
No, and he's going to get the same opportunities next year, and you think Carter Gauthier is going to be here in a second season for Leo Carlson and hopefully fully healthy seasons for guys like Zegras and McTavish and Troy Terry. And Patrick Beek says the Ducks want to take steps forward next year. I mean, that's, adding some new names to the team and Carter Gauthier and potentially some other additions to the team, and then having the kids take steps forward. Like, you're at that point in that stage where you've got enough young, exciting talent that you've got to let them try and run with it. And we talked about this a little bit. Like, I believe it might be a little bit too early to say for sure the Ducks are ready to take that next step. But at some point, like, when your top six is five of the six of them are young, intriguing, exciting talents, that at some point you've got to just let them go and take the reins and see if they can do it. And then if they don't, then you know where you're at and you know what you need to address. But I'm fine going into next year saying, like, you know, those five kids are the five of the top six, and then you throw Vetrano in there, and then you've got Strom being able to be a third line guy and hopefully help to boost some of the scoring in the bottom six, and you put some guys around him as well, and then hopefully things take a step forward. The young defensemen are going to take steps forward, so Leno should be here next year, so the all signs point to things could get better next year. But again, it relies a lot of on what it relied on this year, is can the kids take steps forward, and are they all going to take steps forward together? Is there going to be some guys who struggle? So that'll be the interesting, I think, talking point from there, and kind of what we gathered from the Pat Verbeek comments after the deadline is, we're not going to jump to conclusions. We're not going to trade these guys in the offseason. We're not looking to move Fowler. We're not looking to move Gibby, Vetrano, unless they get blown out of the water with an offer. He feels that this roster can take steps forward next year, and they're largely going to go with the guys that they have now, with a few small minor additions, and really let the kids run with it.
Yeah, no, I'm excited. I don't think this team is going to be anywhere near a playoff spot next year, but that's fine. I'm not worried. I'm not expecting them to be, and I don't care if they are.
We've already made some slight progress from last year. We're not dead last.
Yeah,
so if you can take these slight steps forward, and maybe you get a little bit closer, you compete for a wild card or playoff spot a little bit longer than you did this year, an inch closer to that goal, then you don't necessarily have to make it that next year. You just have to improve upon what they did this year, which should be relatively easy considering where they're likely going to finish this year in the bottom five, I would imagine, again. So.
Yep. Yep. No, I think, I mean, they should be in the bottom three again. I don't see who's going to pass them. It's, you know, I don't know how Columbus can catch them, so.
No.
But, yeah.
It's
so, easy, yeah.
But don't put it past them, man. Columbus is in shambles as well, so we'll see. But after games like tonight, it's a pretty bad 6-2 loss to the Stars. I think we're safe to go. Unless you start Lucas Dostal for the rest of the year, then hold on, we got a shot. We got a shot to start climbing. So, yeah.
Yeah, we'll make it. That's how we sneak into the playoffs.
Yeah. That's an extra thing. And he's a guy who's got to take a step forward too, right? But it seems like John Gibson's going to be here next year, so it'll be another bit of a tandem. And again, we're rolling into the same situation we've had for the last couple decades with the goaltenders, is there always seems to be one guy challenging the other guy for a role, which is, I mean, not the worst place to be in. We haven't really looked for a netminder. So it feels like we're going to roll into the same thing where Lucas Dostal is going to kind of run a tandem here with John Gibson until he's ready to take the starting job. And then depending where they're at with John Gibson's contract at that point, it might be a little bit easier to move him.
There you go. That's what matters, folks. Maybe having an extra year off a bit and having our retention slots back, maybe it happens. Let's see. I'm not going to get my hopes up.
No. All right, well, if we don't have anything else, that wraps it up for, I think, for this one. Good kind of run through of the trade deadline. I do want to get back on, if we can, in the next little bit here and get back to another deeper discussion about the Ducks and what we hoped they could have done or what that looks like for the offseason, and dive into Pat Verbeek's comments a little bit more and just kind of assess over the next little week or so of games and what it looks like. And we obviously, Olin Zellweger looks like he's here to stay. So just kind of see the ramifications from the moves that were made at the trade deadline and how it shapes out on the roster over the next little bit. And then let's dive back in and really start kind of assessing what it looks like for the rest of this year and heading into the offseason.
Sounds like a party, man. I'm looking forward to it.
Awesome. Okay, appreciate you guys. Jesus, man, it's getting late.
Thank you, everybody. You
guys coming out, listen to the show, sticking with us. Hope you guys enjoyed what was another not really eventful trade deadline. But good times.
A successful one, nonetheless, I think, is important to say. It wasn't great, but it was successful. They did the business that they needed to do, and I think the team is in a better spot today than they were yesterday. Heading into the rest of the season and into next year.
Yeah. And let's hope the guys get healthy for the last little stretch of games here. We can see, you know, Zegras, Terry, McTavish, Carlson, all these guys healthy at the same time. Maybe depending on how the season goes for Carter Gauthier and Sam Colangelo, we heard Verbeek mention that they might get signed, or their plan is to sign, or that maybe we see a game or two at the end of the season. Just depends on how their college season goes. They might get in a game or two. That'd be nice to see. Not getting my hopes up, but a lot of little extra things to look forward to and what's still going to be kind of a dark season. But over the last little stretch of games here, maybe some more Lucas Dostal games here or there, so some little bright spots to look forward to. But we will be back in the next little bit here to break it down, look at some more ramifications from the trade deadline, and start looking forward to the off season.
Sounds like a party, man. Looking forward to it. And go Ducks.
I love the hesitation there.
Yeah.
This is, people are gonna think that you're about to say go Kings, but
no, they weren't. They wouldn't do that. I would. Why would I say that? I never would. I would never say that. That's terrible. Why would you slander me?
They are now.
Oh boy, I'm in trouble.
All right, take care, guys.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP lawn and garden and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals.
Save big money at
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.